are back on the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm Lindsay Patterson alongside the Cincinnati Inquirer beat writer Tyler Dragon, our man Kareem Elgazar behind the scenes producing and a part of our crew today. And guys, we still have plenty to talk about this offseason. Right now, the Cincinnati Bengals and other NFL teams are wrapping up their virtual workouts, and we'll get to all of that and more. But I got to start with what's happening right now. COVID, it isn't going anywhere, guys.
It's really not, and they're talking about a second wave coming October, so it's going to be interesting to see how these sports return to play. We've seen MLB there had an impasse right now, but the NBA, they're allegedly going to come back in late July. NHL's coming back in late July. Major League Soccer, NFL. It's going to be interesting to see if a training camp happens, because it is impossible to socially distance playing football and being in the locker room. Training camp has around 90 players. That's not counting coaching staff, the trainers, the medical staff. There are a lot of people involved in football, and to see training camp happening amid this coronavirus pandemic, I hate to be pessimistic, but it's going to be tough, but we'll see. The NFL's planning as if training camp's going to happen. We all hope as football fans that is going to happen, but you know, we saw, I don't know if we all saw, but Dr. Anthony Fauci, who's the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, says he doesn't think that football is going to happen. Well, he said it's going to be tough for football to happen this year because of the second wave that and coronavirus that is anticipated to happen. So we'll see. I think we're all day to day at this point.
Yeah, I obviously, you know, the COVID and the coronavirus pandemic isn't going to go away until we get a vaccine. And really until after, sometime after we get a vaccine, which is at least a year away, maybe 18 months away. So even if the numbers really almost go down all the way down near zero, we're still going to have, you know, the novel coronavirus, you know, with us well into next year. In terms of just playing football, I mean, we were just speaking before we, you know, we went live on the podcast that you can get creative with some physical distancing with the locker rooms and the sideline, and maybe even staggering practice and staggering players and doing install and stuff like that. But in terms of playing football, I mean, can't. So if, and another thing to keep in mind, and I think a lot of our listeners already know this, is that the reason it's so dangerous for an athlete to contract any kind of disease is because they're known as, quote, super spreaders. And, you know, they're in contact with a lot of people on the playing field and in and around the playing field, but also they travel, even with limited travel, even with size down travel, like they're discussing in baseball, in Major League Baseball. If an athlete gets it, they spread it way farther, way faster than a normal, ordinary person. So, I'm also a little bit of a pessimist when it comes to not only football and agreeing with Dr. Fauci, but also baseball. I still don't think they're going to play baseball, not only because of the money, but also just the surrounding circumstances. But again, as the listeners know, that is my main job. That's our main job is sports. And I love bringing our readers and customers and listeners video and pictures from the field. That's my main job. I hope I'm wrong. I want to be wrong, as I've said before.
Sports are really interesting right now because, Kareem, as you mentioned, Major League Baseball and the Players Association, right now they're fighting over dollars. And, of course, health is a concern when you look at that. And you're able to social distance in Major League Baseball. You see Major League Soccer in the NBA. They're going to go to Orlando and do kind of more of a tournament style where they're social distancing in the Orlando bubble right now. You look at the NFL, we've talked about it before. You can make the 6 feet apart in a locker room and the social distancing as much as you can. But when you start out training camp in a little less than 6 weeks with over 90 guys, not even counting the player personnel, it makes things difficult for the NFL moving forward. And what's going to happen is, and we saw it this past week, and the headline, of course, is Zeke Elliott when he tests positive for COVID. This is going to happen. this is going to be a normal thing where these players are going to test positive as we start training camp and moving forward to regular season. What's interesting, what the NFL has to do is they have to come up with ways to prevent this, prevent it from spreading. And of course, Dr. Fauci's comments, they made a headline on Twitter earlier when it said football may not happen. People click on the article and they're like, oh, hold up. I mean, I still feel it's going to happen, but, you know, you have to use caution. And I'll give Dr. Alan Sills, the NFL chief medical officer, who commented on Fauci's comments, because they had a meeting earlier, and they're going to be meeting a lot between now and NFL training camp. And he said, quote, make no mistake, this is no easy task. We'll make adjustments as necessary to meet the public health environment as we prepare for the 2020 season as scheduled, with increased protocols and safety measures for all players, personnel, and attendees. We'll be flexible and adaptable in the environment to adjust to this virus as needed. Tyler, when you look at that, with, as I mentioned right now, the Bengals are scheduled to go to training camp on July 28th. What does the NFL need to do right now?
We're all in wait-and-see mode, really. And I said a couple weeks ago, I have never been in an NFL locker room where it's just one player with a cold or one player with the flu. It's usually a string of players that are sick, because in an NFL locker room, in meetings, on the field, everybody is in close proximity. So people are prone to catch a virus and get sick. That's just the way it is. Football is a collision sport. You cannot shy away from contact in football. So it's bound to happen. And I hate to be negative, but that's just what it is. Now, we can just hope that, you know, in 18 months from now or less, by the end of the year, there's a vaccine. I know there's a different timeline depending on which articles or who you listen to or who you read. But like every sport, everyone is going to try to come back and have as safe protocols as possible to prevent a spread of the coronavirus. And we've seen in other sports, they've created a bubble, but to create a bubble in football is, in my opinion, is almost impossible. But I'm not a doctor. They don't pay me to be one. I'm not going to fake one either. I hope there's a football season. I hope there's training camp, but it's going to be tough.
I mentioned it before on here. I think when you look at these sports returning and you see some of the hotbed cities saying we're reopening, we're in phase one, phase two, I mean, New York, New Jersey included, it's all about money. And I hate to be insensitive to it, because we obviously know this is a health issue and it's really scary. It's scary for the players who are out there putting their life on the line by traveling for their job and having the COVID spread. You don't want to deal with that. But I honestly think that obviously the unions and, you know, NFL and Major League Baseball and the Players Association, everybody kind of dealing with that right now, they all have to be on the same page and agree to it. But I think overall, Kareem, what makes it interesting is you have 90 guys by the start of training camp, and there were reports yesterday that the practice squad will expand its players right now just to be flexible with COVID in case somebody goes down and they need someone to step up, because these guys, if they test positive for COVID, and again, we're going to find out more about the protocols and what steps the NFL are going to take, they're going to have to stay inside 14 days. They're going to have to be away from their teammates. So we talk about 90 players being a lot until you cut your roster down to 53 man. Is it smart for the NFL to add players to a practice squad, just meaning more bodies are there, or do you cut the roster down prior to training camp?
That's a brutally tough question to I think from a football playing perspective, extra bodies is what you need, because it's inevitable. Someone is going to contract the coronavirus, and so you need extra players to fill in. From a health perspective, no. Fewer people, the better, generally, always. So you have to weigh which one is more important. To me, the answer is clear. Public health is more important. The health of the players, the health of the roster is more important, not just in the short term for the season, but in the long term. You've invested in in these players, with some of them with long-term lucrative contracts, and you run the risk of bringing in more people to possibly, potentially contract and spread the virus. I don't think there's a good answer to that question at all. I would argue public health should be the number one priority, regardless if you're a football player or a janitor at a school.
We also didn't mention that the NFL and the country in general would need mass testing as well get a season underway. They've allegedly have enough testing kits for the NBA and the MLS to return, but NFL would need mass testing pretty much daily for all the players or players that are showing symptoms for training camp to start on time.
And I made this point on the last podcast, and I don't mean to repeat myself, but that's the main sticking point for me is, you know, Cincinnati, there are two locations for people here in Cincinnati, ordinary people, regular people like you and I, who are asymptomatic, showing no symptoms, to go get a test. That's in Bank Street, 800 Bank Street, I believe, and one in Middletown. That's it. And one of them, I think the one downtown, is open from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Meantime, ball players are conceivably going to get tested every day or every other day. For me, I know I'm probably in the minority on this. That doesn't sit well with me. That actually aggravates me a lot. And again, as I've said before, the almighty dollar is king in this country, and I get it. But if we're going to test ball players who are not essential, okay, they are not essential every other day or every day, but ordinary people who don't show symptoms have difficulty or access to getting tested, I don't see how they're going to play any sport. Now, again, I know I'm in the minority. I know that my opinion is widely very pessimistic. But, you know, that's just how I feel. And I'm on here to provide some of my opinions. So I'm opining.
Well, what makes it interesting, though, is you look at these numbers in Florida that just keep jumping. I mean, there's record-setting numbers right now with the COVID spread, and they're supposed to play an NBA and Major League Soccer tournament there. And I know they're all going to be, you know, on campus in the bubble, and this is where they need to be. There's rules, there's testing. Tyler, it's a little crazy to think that, like, we are going to see sports in a couple weeks with everything still going on, and you can't ignore what's happening in Florida right now.
Yeah, and it's mind-boggling because when I see a map every day on the news, Florida is a hotbed right now. They have Florida colored bright red, which is an indication that the numbers are going up in Florida and Texas. I believe in 18 states, numbers are rapidly rising as of today. And Florida is one of them. And to think that in a few weeks, a lot of the sports world is going to ascend to Orlando, the NBA, WNBA, it's mind-boggling. But that bubble and the outline that the NBA has laid out for a return is very thorough. And we mentioned Dr. Anthony Fauci earlier. He said that the NBA's outline, he agrees with it, and it's the safest way to return. One thing that's good about basketball is there're not going to be that many people involved. If I'm not mistaken, I believe 35 people per team. That includes players, coaching staff, and, you know, personnel department, training staff. So, and then there are only going to be, you know, a certain number of teams, 22, I believe, off the top of my head. And then after a few weeks, that number is going to be cut drastically with playoffs and everything. So, and even then, the NBA is not so sure, and people aren't so sure that it's going to come back, because there are a lot of variables, and then there's a lot of risk at play. And like you said, those numbers are rising every day. And some of that is a tribute to Florida opened up too early. And so did Texas and a lot of other states. And the numbers weren't going down. And from what everybody said, they weren't ready to begin a reopening process. Florida opened up anyways. And that is why you see a setback in a lot of these states.
So I have a theory about why in the southern states, Florida and out west, we're seeing an increase. It's really hot down there, okay, in these areas in Florida right now. It's heating up Texas and now in the southwest. And my theory is kind of similar to what happens in the flu during the flu season in the cold in the northern states. People go inside when it's hot outside. And that's the virus thrives. When you go inside, the virus thrives, right? So, you know, in the South, I think that's what's happening is yes, in addition to the reopening, in addition to the 50 different strategies we have trying to combat this COVID, is that people are going inside when it's hot and they're contracting the virus. So that's a good segue into the fall, going into football season. We talk about the flu and why it's difficult, why the flu is more prominent in the fall is because people are inside. It's cold in the northern states. There's no way to go out. There is a way to go outside, but people don't spend too much time outside because it's so cold, so they go inside in during the fall and winter months. And so when the inevitable flu returns, coupled with the current COVID in the fall, right in the heart of football season, that's going to – a collision of those two are going to come together, and we're going to try to play football, a contact sport that you cannot physically distance. And so when it comes to also risk, you mentioned risk, Tyler, all of this is cost a risk analysis, right? Cost-benefit analysis. And to me, the risks far outweigh the benefits. It's not even close. Pardon me if I'm getting a little, annoyed by folks wanting to play, play football and play sports, hell bent on doing that when we're just kind of seemingly passing over the public health risk. And the last thing I want to mention before we move on to another topic is if this blows up in the fall, remember, it's a novel coronavirus, meaning we've never seen it before. We have no research on it. We don't know the long-term effects of it. And so when somebody says, oh, they recovered, or when a physician or a doctor or health official say, 15 people or 100 people or 1,000 people have recovered, they recovered in the short term. We don't know the long-term damage of that it happens on the person's internal organs, and particularly the respiratory system like the lungs. It's novel. There's no research. So when the people say, the flu kills more people or the flu infects more people, number one, the flu does not, as we know, there's a lot of research, the flu does not attack internal organs. Okay. It doesn't carry long-term chronic effects even after you've recovered, to my understanding. Meantime, we don't have any of that information with the coronavirus, with the novel new coronavirus. So I just think, being hell-bent on reopening sports when we don't know anything is foolish. But again, the business of America is business, and getting stuff done and opening up and doing the money-making activities is part of our DNA as a country, as Americans. So these are extraordinarily difficult times to navigate, and to those medical professionals in these sports leagues, and really all these medical professionals who have to make these calls I do not envy them one bit.
And that's one thing, again, we've never experienced this before. Kareem, you mentioned that earlier. We don't know what we're dealing with. I know as the months keep happening, when things are going to be okay, when the vaccine is going to be available for people to take, and if they're going to be okay taking that vaccine. All of that's to be determined right now. One thing we do know is the NFLPA and the NFL, they'll have to agree on if they are ready to return and if the players do feel safe. And obviously the NFL is doing a lot of behind the scenes things, even though they're still doing a lot virtually. I mean, as we saw the NFL virtual draft, we saw the offseason workouts. Now this is the real deal. The NFL is going to see training camp next month, but as of now, it's just scheduled. We'll see if that's official or not. But we're going to move on to what we do know now. And Tyler, I think what's been really crazy and almost like the last 7 days with the Cincinnati Bengals is we're hearing more from them and more from them from what they're trying to do off the field. And I know you had a chance to talk to offensive coordinator Brian Callahan, but also you put this on Twitter last week, and it's something that you and I have actually talked about in a previous podcast, is statements. We live in a world right now in social media of statements. We all know what's happening around the United States right now. And when we've talked about it in the last podcast, The Bengals put out a statement, and the first reaction I got from a lot of people was, oh, that's it. That's what they're going to say. You know, they were quiet till now. Then they said this. This isn't enough. They put out a statement, but what I appreciate and what I feel like they're doing behind the scenes with the players have spoken out, what the Bengals are talking about besides the virtual offseason workouts is they are trying to make a change. And I think we're starting to see that. I mean, they're going to do it this Friday, Tyler.
Yeah. In that statement, well, they released on the team website, they're donating money to underserved areas in the community. So I do applaud them for that. Anytime somebody opens up their wallet and makes a charitable donation, that is something that should be praised and commended. And they also, on Friday, they're making a Juneteenth a company holiday. I reported that yesterday. A holiday commemorates the ending of slavery. So all Bengals employees will be off. The facility will be closed down, and they are going to have it as a day of remembrance. And, you know, that's a big holiday in my community, especially because it marks the ending of slavery. And that's obviously with the times that we're in the midst of now with socially, it's good to reflect and kind of think of what we can do as a society to make a positive impact and create change and change for the better. And that's part of that is eradicating racism and systematic oppression that has plagued our country for over 400 years.
And this is actually the first time that we've had a chance to talk after Roger Goodell released a video and talked to everyone and mentioned, you know, where they're donating to, what changes need to happen. I thought it was really crazy for it to come out, and actually a great thing. One of the staff members on with the NFL put together a video with some of the NFL stars and released it behind Rodgers' back, and then Rodgers spoke out and he said, yes, we need to change. I realize that I haven't done enough, and I feel like, and again, actions really matter, and we'll see in the next couple weeks. It's not just a what happened last week or you know, the trend of what people are supporting and what they're doing. It's all about what they continue to do. Use your voice, speak about differences, and make changes, even if it's not out there on social media, just to make sure you're continuing the conversation. And I think the NFL, this is going to be a big year, and I feel those changes are coming, Tyler.
Yeah, and I want to make it clear. I think people, there's a disconnect. It's not the NFL, the NBA, and the players' job to end racism and systemic oppression. It is up to government officials. It's up to people with can make the hiring power, people that have power to create change. And, you know, the NBA and the NFL and those players, yes, they have a large platform and they can use their voices, they can use their money to try to implement change. But it is up to the people that make decisions. And those are the elected officials. So, and, you know, law enforcement officers, and it's up to them to create programs and implement policy so we can have a better society and we can have equality in our country. So I commend the players and the NFL for, you know, pumping in money to the Players Coalition and for players like LeBron James raising awareness and trying to get more people to register to vote. But it should not, the onus should not be on the players and NFL. The onus should be on Congress, the governors, the Senate, the senators, the president. I mean, I'm not trying to get political at all, but those are the people that we need to hold accountable to create change in our society.
I would also add, in addition to those people that you mentioned, Tyler, you're 100% correct, I think. But as also, it's the onus is on us as well in our daily interactions. I'll give you a small example. I had a roof leak the other day, and a guy I know, a handyman that I know, is a really good guy. We know each other. for some time, and he came by and we started talking a little bit. He knows I'm a photographer, and he was asking about, you know, my safety and what it's like covering the protests and the counter protesters and dealing with the police and stuff. And, you know, he made a comment that he's like, I just don't understand why there's a need for this. And I just turned to him and I said, look, man, we don't know what it's like to be black in this country. So for us to make judgments as to why they're angry or why they're upset or why this is going on is unfair. And I feel like in that little interaction, I got through to him. And he's like, you know what, you're right. I don't know what it's like. And then I added, do you think there would be a problem? Do you think they're angry for no reason? Do you think people are upset for no reason? You know, there has to be a reason. And people are not irrational, in my opinion. They're not going to take to the streets if there isn't really a problem. So you're right, Tyler. I think in addition to all those folks, you know, those who do have decision-making power, we also have a responsibility to do in our daily interactions with people. In addition to everyone else who do have big platforms and who do have a wide variety, a wide breadth of decision-making prowess.
Tyler, you mentioned it. It isn't the athlete's job. I do feel like with the big platform they have, and not to say this is right, and you know, maybe an athlete shouldn't be a role model who you listen to, but people listen. They start to listen when they see it out there on their Instagram or their Facebook or their Twitter, and they're like, oh my man, the guy that I love and I you know, worship my game after. I agree with him. I agree that this is important, and obviously you shouldn't need that, but some people do, and I feel like they're using their platform for good, and I think people are listening, and it just felt like things are going in the right direction as far as open conversation. Again, a lot has to continue, and we have to see changes, and this is going to take more than just a month of happenings and what we've seen in recent events, but I think it's a start, and where it's a start is people are mentioning what happened with Colin Kaepernick, and they're talking about, hey, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I didn't understand why he was kneeling a couple years ago, but now I get it. I mean, we've talked enough about Drew Brees before and him apologizing and then obviously saying, I didn't understand where my teammates were coming. I mean, I understand where my teammates are coming from. I apologize. But I think that teams are going to give Colin a chance. And not to say that this isn't fair. It should have happened before. But I see changes with teams being open in conversation. I mean, when the NFL season does start, there are going to be several players who take a knee. And more people, I feel like, are going to finally understand it and be like, okay, I legit get this. I understand why he's doing this. And he used his platform for that, and more teams are being open to it.
Yeah, when I wrote my Colin Kaepernick column, I have to admit, my email, my mentions were blowing up. But I think it's funny. I find it interesting that my email and my mentions aren't blowing up with Colin Kaepernick haters right now after Roger Goodell, Anthony Lynn, and so many players and coaches have said, you know, he deserves an opportunity. And he does. It's obvious that he was blackballed because he took a knee during the national anthem to raise awareness to police brutality and social injustice. That's why he did it. He was not disrespecting the flag. He was not disrespecting the national anthem. And he was raising awareness. People who refuse to believe that are just being naive or ignorant. I'm sorry. That's just me being frank. And he deserves an opportunity. Now, one thing that I do have to say about Kaepernick is if he wants to play, he should make that known. Kaepernick is doing himself a little bit of a disservice for not speaking out more. He's really quiet and he hasn't been in the public eye saying, you know, I want to play. I will take a backup role. I just want to have the opportunity, a fair opportunity to compete for a job. Because while Roger Goodell, Anthony Lynn, players, coaches are saying Kaepernick was blackballed and he deserves an opportunity, we're not hearing a lot from Kaepernick. And I've talked to several players and several coaches around the league privately, and they're all wondering the same thing. Does Kaepernick want to play anymore, or does he like his life as being a social activist? And that is perfectly fine if he wants to continue being an activist and not play football anymore, if he found his lane and found his calling. But while everybody is saying Kaepernick deserves a job, Kaepernick was blackballed and we should get him back in the NFL, including myself, Kaepernick would help himself out in achieving that goal, if it is in fact his goal, by speaking out and saying, yes, I still want to play football, no matter what role I have in a team, whether that's a starter or a backup.
I mean, we look at it right now. You have some of the guys who aren't signed yet, and Cam Newton and Colin Kaepernick, and it doesn't hurt a team. I mean, we've heard some NFL teams say, yeah, he's going to be on our workout list, and more of that might come out in the next couple weeks. The Cincinnati Bengals, though, I don't think it has zero to do with Colin Kaepernick. They've pretty much told us they're set at quarterback. They feel comfortable with the young guys they have as backup quarterback. Joe Burrow is obviously their starter right now. I don't see that happening. Do you guys see Colin coming in for a workout in Cincy?
Yeah, the Bengals, they like their young quarterback room. I don't necessarily agree with it. I think Kaepernick will be a good backup quarterback for Joe Burrow. We all saw the Ryan Finley experiment. I don't think either one of us would say Kaepernick, 4 years removed from the game, is not a better option than Ryan Finley. And that's no disrespect to Ryan Finley, but Colin Kaepernick played in the Super Bowl. And he was a productive quarterback. And everybody wants to point to, oh, well, he was terrible in that 2016 season. Did you guys see the roster that was around him during that season? Like, it's not like the 49ers did him any favors with his surrounding parts. But to answer your question, I don't see him being a Bengals quarterback. Would he be a fit? I think he would be a great backup quarterback to Joe Burrow. All rookie quarterbacks, in my opinion, is beneficial for them to have a veteran or somebody more experience behind them to kind of teach them the ropes and show them the day-to-day operations of being an NFL quarterback. So the Bengals, they disagree. They like what they have in the quarterback room with Ryan Finley and Jake Delgado, but I don't agree.
Yeah, I think the Bengals are good. They feel good with what they got. But also, I think for Joe Burrow's development, you want to have a clean, completely clean slate, nice, fresh, when you're fresh experience coming into the NFL. And I think, you know, specifically bringing in Colin Kaepernick as a backup for him could be a disservice to Joe Burrow just simply because of the hubbub that would surround it. I think a veteran – I would agree with you, Tyler, that a veteran quarterback coupled with a rookie quarterback is beneficial. But in terms of specifically Colin Kaepernick, for this specific instance with Joe Burrow, I don't think it's actually a very good service for Joe because he needs to stay focused and learn. He doesn't want you don't want to have any extra distraction, because there's plenty of distraction. Number one pick, the Bengals need a lot of help. There's enough distraction for him and pressure. Adding that extra element in this instance, I think would make would not actually be beneficial for him. Now again, bringing in a veteran quarterback of some other type would be good for him. And then if Colin Kaepernick wants to go and be a backup quarterback to an established quarterback, that would be a good, I think, plate landing spot for him.
All that's to be determined. Again, the Cincinnati Bengals and the other NFL teams are wrapping up with their virtual offseason workouts. Tyler has a piece on Cincinnati.com. He caught up with offensive coordinator Brian Callahan. Still plenty to talk about as the NFL and the Players Association come together and decide when they are going to get to training camp. But make sure you're checking it out. Ian Hugh Sports over on Cincinnati.com. Our guys, Kareem Elbazar and Tyler Dragon. Thank you for joining us again on the Bengals Beat Podcast.